Just how does one successfully re-platform? What is headless? And why should we all be thinking about marketplaces?
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello, welcome. It's another episode of our 2022 January Growth Series. If you are tuning in for the first time or the first time in a while, hello and welcome back. It's excellent to be chatting to you. Here on the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, we bring you inspiring stories and examples of retailers and brands who are striving for e-commerce success and doing interesting things on the path to net zero. Every January, we release our January Growth Series to help you pull together your perfect plan for 2022. We've some super inspiring guests coming up for you throughout these 9 episodes, and to be honest, for the rest of the year, including our hugely popular mashup episodes where a flock of e-commerce experts each share their bite-sized top tips. In this episode, we're tackling a topic that can make or break your plans, your tech stack, your website. My guest is going to be sharing the highs and lows of his recent journey through replatforming the Grenson Even shoes business. Get ready to learn a lot from Ash as soon as we've heard from our sponsors. Recharge is the leading subscription management solution helping e-commerce merchants of all sizes launch and scale subscription offerings. The subscription market is predicted to grow to nearly $500 billion, that's billion with a B, by 2025. As the fastest growing area in commerce, subscriptions hold tremendous opportunities to build a community of customers who share your values. Recharge powers the growth of thousands of subscription merchants and their communities, turning one-time transactions into long-term customer relationships. With subscriptions, merchants are able to experience predictable revenue, increased customer loyalty, and higher average order values. Whether you're a direct-to-consumer business or an omnichannel brand, subscriptions strengthen your brand's relationship with your customers and make it easy for consumers to make repeat purchases. Turn transactions into relationships and experience seamless subscription commerce with Recharge. Get started today with the subscription payment solution trusted by over 45 million subscribers worldwide. Check them out at rechargepayments.com/masterplan. And now to introduce today's special guest. Ash Hubbard is in charge of e-commerce at Grenson Shoes, a heritage British brand with a young heart. The business was founded over 150 years ago, and as well as the D2C website, they wholesale to top online and offline department stores such as Mr. Porter, Matches Fashion, and Selfridges. They also have their own physical stores across London. Hello, Ash.
Hello.
It's great to have you here. How did you get into e-commerce?
Probably one of the most convoluted ways ever, really. So left school at 16. I'm a university of lifer, as they say. Basically had dreams of being in the music industry and worked in record shops and DJing, etc. Got to the early 20s and thought, oh man, I need a real job. So I actually started working for a software business in the early 2000s. Which predominantly supplied systems to universities and conference centres around the world. And obviously, the next logical sort of step in their development was building web front ends to all these systems so that delegates could register and students could apply for their accommodation online and et cetera, et cetera. So I got involved with that side of things, from support moving through into implementation and project management, and sort of taught myself really front end development to a point, and worked there for 7-8 years, I think, in the end, and ended up managing the front end design team, so a group of designers and developers who specialized in the UI and UX work for all of our customers around the world, universities, conference centers, everywhere. And I got to the stage where I started to think, really, to make the next step in this digital industry that I've kind of fallen into and love, I think you need to be client side. I don't think the agency/supplier side really gets the recognition that often. Whenever you see big events in the industry, new sites going live or stuff like that, the actual people that built it don't really get the mention. It's the strategists, if you like, and the people that own the channel. So I was lucky enough that I live local to a role that came up, which was pretty much perfect for anyone who wants to work in digital. So at the time, the company was called the Luminar Group. They owned and operated 60 nightclubs and bars across the UK. And when I say that, people think, oh, that's a bit of a sort of seedy, strange business, isn't it, really? But people forget that there's a massive corporate machine running governance and health and safety and everything behind that sort of commercial nightclub model. And Luminar was turning over well over 100 million a year. So it wasn't a small business. And the reason why I say it's a gold mine for anyone into digital, really, is the customer demographic was 18 to 24-year-olds. So,
wow. You
know, if you want to trial anything with a digitally native audience, there isn't probably a better sweet spot, really. It was great because I had lots of ideas that I wanted to put into practice. I had a very good manager who wanted to push these ideas and leverage them. We had budgets, which is the key thing, really. and we broke a few firsts, really. We had in-app ordering in all the venues for iOS and Android, so you could browse the drinks and menus, etc., and order, and then a few minutes later you just get an alert and you can go and pick up your drinks paid from the bar instead of queuing five or six people deep. So we rolled that out. We had 60 venues, like I said, across around 8 or 9 brands, so I managed all of the e-commerce platform for those. All the ticket sales and advance and bookings, etc., were all handled online, which was quite a challenge, but a great thing for the CV, a great learning curve, really, managing that those many different brands on a single platform and the intricacies of multi-site, multi-brand, all these sort of challenges that come along with it is a great baptism of fire. And it was a good experience. We almost doubled revenue in my time there through telesales systems as well. And we implemented big data and a single customer view platform. And again, a brilliant playground for anyone to digital because you had so many data sources. We had like Wi-Fi logins, door security scanners, scanning ID. We had website logins. We had app logins. We had people using the Teals mailing list signups, data points everywhere to put, even the Facebook logins. We were, at the time, the Facebook permissions were a bit more open. So when people logged into our apps with Facebook, we were able to store their music likes and then start to take that data and look across the estate and see which artists were bubbling up from our customer base to drive talent bookings in venue and start to look at who should we be booking as DJs or performers. And even brands they're into, clothing brands, where's their similarities between certain brands and trends, and what can we look at and start to mold our marketing in. So it was amazing, basically.
Certainly, Ash, listening to that, my brain is going, whoa, that's so much more complex than e-commerce, but a form of e-commerce too.
Yeah, definitely. It's just intangible goods. It was tickets. It wasn't, we weren't delivering a box product. We were delivering digital PDFs, basically, for a price.
And all that experience working with the complex tech stack that you had at Luminaire with the nightclubs and building tech stacks essentially in the job before, I guess makes you very well positioned to do a big e-commerce replatforming project.
I'd hope so.
Or does it make you more frustrated than the average e-commerce manager, director, head of as the process rolls along?
I think it probably frustrates our agency partners more when they see the size of the spec I've given them with fully documented XML schemas for APIs and JSON REST paths and data models and everything like that. But yeah, it does get frustrating sometimes when you know how quick changes can be done. But obviously, when a third party's got to work on them, they've got other priorities and other customers. And whilst you can't, the left side of your brain tells you that, the right side of the brain is like, come on, just hurry up and do it. where's my work? But
so, Ash, the replatforming project you've just been through for Grenson, why was the decision made to do it? Because I think that's one of the hardest things a business has to work out is when the right time is to shift.
Our hand was purely forced by expiring tech, really. We were Magento 1 users. So we probably chanced our arm, to be fair, and left it as long as we could to make the decision. But yeah, it was a tough one to make, because we were actually happy with things the way they were. We had frustrations, but the replatforming also drove quite a lot of maybe unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. For example, our agency supplier that we had a relationship with Magento, was an Adobe partner. So it meant that if we didn't stay with Magento, we had to almost throw the baby out with the bathwater, because it meant getting a new systems implementer to come and build anything else that wasn't Magento, which was a difficult decision to have to make, because you're kind of stepping into the unknown with maybe a new platform and the unknown with a new agency, whilst trying to keep a business running through probably the most difficult period since, I don't know when, since World War II probably, in terms of global turmoil. So yeah, I guess if we can survive that and replatform, we can do anything really.
And you mentioned you were with an Adobe partner on the M1 platform. How did you come about deciding to leave the Magento ecosystem or the Adobe ecosystem?
Harping back to my roots, really. Obviously, like I said in the start, a lot of my early experience was with the public sector in university. So I ran quite a big tender, to be honest, and I went into lots and lots of detail around tech within that tender, and not just the business requirements, but really trying to understand the nitty-gritty of the offerings. I think we invited all of the majors, you know, Shopify, Magento, BigCommerce were a bit of a late entry, and some more bespoke, smaller platforms. And as we started getting the results back from some agency partners and actually the software vendors themselves, it quickly became a two-horse race with BigCommerce and Magento, mainly because of our multi-currency, multi-site requirements, mm-hmm. and ERP integration needs, etc. So it ruled out some of the smaller platforms, or those that would have required lots of different individual sites to be able to deliver multi-site functionality, which was Shopify at the time as well, unfortunately. So that's where that came to a close for us. But in all honesty, we got to the end of the tender, and there was almost a like for like with BigCommerce and Magento. And what really pushed us over the edge, I think, was, and I still actually think we made the right decision, even if it's what happens today, is Magento feels like it's being shoehorned into a cloud-based application. BigCommerce felt like it's built to be a cloud-based application as a SaaS model. Mm-hmm. And we're a fashion brand. We don't want to be managing servers and web hosting environments and becoming PCI compliant at a data warehouse level, really. So BigCommerce sounded like the best opportunity for us at the time, and we're live with them since August. So I guess that tells the rest of the story, really.
And I guess having gone through, I mean, I'm a fan of a detailed tender doc myself. I've created several over the years, but they won't have been anywhere near as detailed as the one you put together. So any tip, you know, simply because of your background, so how crucial do you think putting the right inputs into the process was to getting an accurate outcome at the end?
For me personally, I think massive, because if you want to prevent scope creep and change in any project, you've got to clear your requirements and your needs up front as detailed as possible, really. And we've all been there. We've all bought products and worked in projects at certain levels where all of a sudden you get 3 weeks in and you realize one of your requirements isn't possible, and there's a mad panic from everyone to look at workarounds and how we can achieve the end result. And I'd be lying, I think most people would be lying, if I said they haven't been there working with software, really.
Would you like to know my worst one?
Go on, yeah, because it means I don't have to say any of mine.
Yeah. I'm happy to share this with everybody. I was working on a book website. I was hired to project manage, from the client's perspective, a new build of a website in the book sector. And the book sector, for anyone who's in it, is a nightmare, because you've got about 8 million. At that point, there's about 8 million products, because you take the data feed from the big warehouses and you then have all these books. Then you have to find a way of trying to create an attractive website with this minging database, basically, to try and pull into it. And there are specialists in how to deal with book data. And obviously, it really slows down a website and all the rest of it. But the client decided not to go with the specialists, which was very frustrating, and to go with someone else. Now, there were key parts of this spec was one, the client's stationery products were to be sold. So there was an element of product that were manually set up by the client and fed out of their warehouse. There were the physical books that we were selling as per the massive database, and there were ebooks that people could download. And throughout the build process, we're going, how are we doing on the ebooks? Oh, yeah, it's fine, it's fine. How are we doing on the ebooks project? Yeah, it's fine, it's fine. We got to 2 weeks before live, and I went, and can we see the ebooks interface? What ebooks interface?
Yeah.
And it was like a totally new database, and we knew how difficult it had been to do the first one. And yeah, that was, yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. A few late nights after that.
For them, more than for me.
That's, again, the beauty of being client side and not agency side, isn't it, really?
Yeah, one thing I will never own is a web agency.
No.
Oh, anyway, we digress massively, yeah. Ash. So clearly putting the right inputs at the beginning is crucial to doing this and properly assessing what you need. How far into the future for your needs were you looking as you put together that tender? Was it a, here's what we need right now? Was it, here's what we think we'll need in a year's time? Is it, this is what we can see happening in 5 years' time?
The honest answer is I didn't really have a time scale on it. I just tried to plan for things to be as open and interconnected as possible, because the big decision we had was headless or managed front end, if you like. And again, it goes back to what I said earlier. Headless in theory sounds lovely, and it's a great thing to talk about if you've got an in-house resource to manage. But unless you've got a pretty structured tech team, it's basically a bespoke website. There's content management systems that can handle it, the headless side of things, but you're going down a road that is very expensive to maintain potentially. So we wanted to look at A, how we could achieve strong brand creative and the ability to change layouts and add different styles of brand creative in terms of front end, as well as making sure that we're not limited by interconnectivity through the API layers, so that in essence, we can just build and build and build and build, basically from the day one requirements of, you know, finance system integrations, ERP integrations, stock integrations, pricing integrations, taxation system, all the sort of standard tech stack, on-site search, everything that's a third party, really. But even in the time that we started that project and we signed on the dotted line, I think late 2019 to choose our vendor, the industry's changed massively already. We've gone through COVID and the high street's in essence taken a massive knock, and retail as a whole is shifted. And within that, I'm just so glad that we've got the connectability that we have and the ability to surface data through the channels that we have, because it almost has weatherproofed us through that storm.
So have you ended up headless or non-headless?
No, not headless.
Not headless.
So one of the beauties of BigCommerce really is they have a language, well, they don't, it's not theirs. They utilize the handlebars logic, the JavaScript sort of handlebars framework. And through that, you can basically build your own templates and build logic into the templates. But realistically, we still sort of treat it like you would manage a headless thing. So the theme isn't just some skin and styling on the website. It's almost an application in its own right. So we've built custom middleware using Laravel, and that handles the transformation of data between third-party systems and brings them into a common format for BigCommerce to be able to ingest and export, etc. But then along with that, it can also act as a proxy service, if you like, as a middleman, so that when you've got third-party elements that utilize APIs in the front end, and you don't want to obviously be just including them in the page, so you're showing your username and password to all and sundry who view your site, we route those sorts of requests through the middleware, from anything from contact forms and Google recapture validation through to some of our DHL return services and how we use their XML feeds for creating returns and return requests and stuff like that. So we kind of went into it with a headless mindset, but using a managed front end, which I think it was actually opens up a lot of opportunity, because you're not having to go down that full bespoke route of with headless. You've got so many implications on speed and performance and security before you've even designed or thought about customer experience, because you've just...
Well, it makes me think a little bit, like you said, you didn't want to self-host and deal with all that nightmare. You wanted to go into the cloud and have a system that dealt with that for you, because you're a fashion brand. You're not, you know,
a technology
finance
house,
experts. Yeah, exactly. And it strikes me as the same thing with the not going headless is you want something that works, that enables you to play to your strengths and to do the right thing for the brand, but you don't want to have to worry about all those extra layers.
Oh, that's exactly right. And the change and the updates and the upgrades to them and the knock-on effects of upgrading one element that breaks another. The thing is, to leverage a SaaS product properly, really, I think you've got to get away from worrying about it working or not. And that is almost the bottom line of us switching from Magento. We switched from, oh God, is Magento going to work this week? Or is there going to be an update? Or is something going to go wrong? Versus, right, we've got BigCommerce. If it goes wrong, it's their problem. We're going to spend that budget now on marketing and building the brand and getting reach and growing. And that's up to them to handle everything else, you know. And to a point, we've almost achieved that. To be realistic, we do have our middleware, which is a bespoke layer. And I think a site of any size is always going to have that, because there's so many integrations with so many different products and layers that you're never going to get away from anything completely bespoke once you grow to a certain size, because it's just the nature of the beast, if you like.
I'm glad you brought us back to that, because one of the things it strikes me is, you know, you said, you know, the ink was on the dotted line for the solution party you're going with in late 2019, and then it went live in 2021, and so much changed in that time. Both, even if we hadn't had the pandemic, the tech evolves and customer behavior evolves anyway, and then it all got accelerated. So do you think the kind of the future proofing, the future success is, and the most important thing to get right in the project was that middleware element, not what the front end looks like, that's relatively straightforward, but to get the integrations built in a way that gave you future adaptability?
Definitely, because a replatforming also is a chance to have a drains up, isn't it? And you review all the frustrations of your integrations that have happened over time, because organically things grow. You introduce new payment methods, new payment providers, you sell through new channels, they need ERP integration updates, etc. And you know, in the rush to get things to market quickly, you have a minimal viable approach, like most people do. You get it working, you're happy with it, there's the odd annoyance, but it works and you're trading and you're generating revenue. Replatform is a chance to say, right, enough's enough, how would we approach this to get it perfect? And That was one of the things that we've done with that middleware, is really doubled down our efforts on that ERP integration. And we had bespoke elements added into the ERP's API layer to better facilitate processes. And we've come up with such a robust integration there. I mean, without naming names, et cetera, our ERP powers all of our downstream elements, really. So once an order is placed on our e-commerce platform, it's dropped into the ERP system, which it handles pick, pack, dispatch, fulfillment, the lot, really, integration with carriers, well, with Scurry, which then integrates with carriers, et cetera, et cetera. So getting it right at that point is critical. And you think, well, that sounds easy. You just post an order into the system and you're like, yeah, that would be easy if you were selling in one currency and you didn't need different invoice formats with tariff codes and weights information and everything else to export now, even to Europe, etc. So it's a lovely machine now. It's all working. I guess the real test will come when we start to do any major change in future and look at what happens there. But I'm pretty confident no matter what happens, the platform in BigCommerce has got enough of a wide schema within its API layer that it's more a case of how long it's going to take and how we do it, rather than can it be done or not, if you know.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And I think I want to flip on to what are the next big projects? But before we do that, are there any key tips you want to share of getting it to live that you'd like to give the audience for those who are going through a similar build project? Anything you wish you'd done differently? Anything you're really pleased you did, from the signing on the dotted line to the Way, we've got a new site moment.
Well, that's a tough one because it was such a drawn out project with the delays, with the COVID pause, if you like, in the middle of it. I guess really in that project, I just wish we'd had more face-to-face time with vendors actually, because everyone's working from home through COVID and a lot of people still are now. And actually so many conversations or processes were probably drawn out that would have been resolved in a 5-minute conversation. Mm-hmm. And I just think when I looked at it, there were 11 vendors involved in the replatforming project because of all the different integration layers. So it's a pretty major piece of work, really. Even once we're on a SaaS platform, it's still not a case of, oh, here's the web company, ring them up and we've got a website next week. You know, it's pretty heavy lifting in terms of architecture. I mean, you can still see, but you can't see because it's an audio-only podcast. But the wall behind me is full of spider diagrams of data flows and logical decision steps, etc.
But that is one of those things which sometimes, especially when it comes to the integrations and solving, why isn't that working? Why isn't this working? Sometimes you just need the relevant brains around a table mm-hmm. and a big old whiteboard
yep.
or on some post-it notes.
The devil's in the detail, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And because you've got to think, you know, it can be down to one wrong variable in an API post, which is the difference between a successful export order being created versus domestic and someone getting the wrong invoice templates, et cetera. It's not a simple business when you're trading globally, really.
Oh, so true. The hours I spent in a previous life trying to work out whether the zero or the one meant subscribed or unsubscribed for various different criteria.
And every vendor's got their own way of handling a Boolean result, haven't they? So it's fun and game.
Anyway, I said we were going to flip onto the future stuff. Now, your site finally went live in August. We are talking about this in November. Yes, everyone, Ash agreed to give up time in November to talk to us all about this. This is going live, everyone, to see in January, by which point I suspect you'll be hitting the green light on some of those projects that over the extended build period, you've been like, I want to do that, but I'm just going to let the site go live. Then we'll deal with Q4 and then we'll do the next phase. So what's got you excited about the new possibilities of the platform for 2022?
Click rate optimization and conversion optimization now, because we use Shogun for a lot of the CMS of static content. And even just the way BigCommerce built is going to allow us to react so much quicker. So as soon as we start noticing pain points, pinch points, dropouts of any kind of large percentage between funnel steps within our checkout flow, we can act on them. And I feel like that was one of the bits that was frustrating before with Magento, because it was a bit more structured in that way, especially Magento 1, bear in mind, we were behind the curve. So it's not fair to say that it's all Magento's fault. It was the scenario and how it played out. And we weren't enterprise either. We were open source Magento. So, you know, there was making structural changes to checkout flows or anything involved quite a lot of investment in time and money and dev time to actually make them. So, I'm really looking forward to having almost like that CMS-based layer now of being able to spot problems, fix problems, monitor change, if you like, and that whole cyclical process of spot, review, fix, kicking in and really optimizing on the traffic we've already got, because it's like anything, really. We've got enough traffic now that we could probably make quite a big dent on improving our sales without actually generating any more traffic.
It's a nice position to be in.
Yeah, it's just a case of converting more of the existing. And I mean, obviously, we're always going to want more traffic, but it's nice to be at a point where you think, actually, you know, a 5% shift here or a 3 or 4% shift here is six-figure sums over a year. So it's, it is a nice position to be in. And I hope that we can really start to leverage that as we go on.
Yeah, it's a six-figure sum, and it's one of those ways in which you make all your marketing spend go a bit further in the future.
Yeah, totally. Every pound spent on paid search, social, display, exactly, just goes a lot further when it's converted properly, really.
Ash and I always talk for ages, and we talked for ages before we even hit play. And one of the things he was telling me he's really excited about and intrigued by at the moment is the marketplaces trend, which is one I am nowhere near as deep into as Ash is. But it does seem like everyone's starting a marketplace at the moment. And I guess having the middleware system that you've now got in place means that should you want to take advantage of everyone now having a marketplace, you can quite quickly spin off the data,
yep,
and then reintegrate, if it's a dropshipping marketplace or whatever, the content back in again.
Yeah, exactly that. So I get it. I mean, I guess COVID's hit the world and people are thinking, man, we've got warehouses full of stock. How do we not have that in future? Well, we don't hold the stock. We leave the stock with the brand and we just become a channel to market. And makes sense, really, doesn't it? If you can maybe earn a slightly lower margin but a much bigger volume,
with none of the risk,
no, and axe the cost of warehousing, dispatch, fulfillment, returns, etc., why would you not? It's almost at the point where retailers are becoming channels and brands in their own right, known for their selections rather than for availability of stock, et cetera. So, I mean, ultimately, you have to be where the consumers are, don't you, really? For any retail business, it's sort of like you've just opened a website, maybe as you're a startup and you've got your new business and you think, wow, I've got this website and I'm going to make loads of money. Well, no, you've actually just opened the smallest shop on the biggest, most busiest high street in the globe. And you don't even have a neon flashing light outside to say we're now open. So you've got to... Sometimes it can be a lot cheaper and faster to grow by adopting a marketplace model or a third-party listing type model than trying to fight against them and take customers from your Amazons or your Zalando or someone like that, when actually you could just list with them and be in the mix and get the reach. And then if you're telling your brand stories properly, then obviously the hope is the repeat customers come direct to you and you've given them a service and they feel close to your brand and they feel like you know them and you understand them and it's a bit more personalized and you go from there. But yeah, I can definitely see the trend. I mean, it's a fantastic time to be a brand at the minute because DTC is getting easier and easier and consumers are open to buying from brands more and more and more. And I just think it's such a fantastic opportunity to grow direct sales now. There's risks, obviously, because you mentioned the risks there of the stock with a marketplace. That's now on us. You know, that's not retailer X's warehouse full of hundreds of pairs of Grenz and shoes that they've got to take the punt on whether they sell or not. That's now on us, on our manufacturing. How much do we produce for demand? Which styles are going to be the hits? Which aren't? There's less of a... If you haven't got as much of a traditional wholesale model, you don't have buyers coming in seasons in advance, predicting trends and giving you a bit of an insight into what they're buying to make you think, right, we need to double down on production on these styles or whatnot. So there's definitely changes. But again, it's just so nice to actually be in a position where you think, well, yeah, if we need to just spin up with a new channel, it's weeks or a month at most, rather than this full drawn out, oh man, how do we integrate this? We've got to go and find a new vendor that can do data aggregation and blah, 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 and go to tender. And it's just lovely being in that position, really.
Yeah, it gives you the choice of going, which marketplaces do we want to become a part of? Not,
yeah,
can we become a part of any marketplace? But the point I'd like to make to everyone listening is it's really important to make sure you're on the right marketplaces because, you know, you guys at Grenson, you're a luxury fashion brand that shouldn't be everywhere, quite frankly, and it would erode the brand, whereas being on certain marketplaces enhances the brand.
Definitely, and it's basically that wholesale model, really. I mean, obviously, being in the right stores in years gone by has been a great marketing channel for us because if you're in America and you're walking into a Neiman Marcus or a Nordstrom or you're in the UK and you're walking into a Selfridges or you're looking online at Mr. Porter or whatever and you're seeing Grenson, it's almost like social proof, isn't it? It's validation that it's a real brand and it's good because these people sell other brands I like. So they're there. But that is shifting, definitely. And I think the marketplace model is interesting because I guess there's some of them where they come at it as though they need brands because they need to generate turnover. And then there's others that probably aren't quite there yet where brands need to think, do I need them? And I guess that will be really interesting over the next few years to see who else makes the shift into a marketplace model versus a traditional sort of stockholding retailer. And also who makes a success of it, because it's a whole new infrastructure and a whole new business model. And just because you were great at selling boxed product doesn't mean that you can migrate as well if your brands that you choose to deal with aren't as good as fulfillment, or you end up having to hold stock for them.
Well, and I think there's a third one in there as well, which is watching, especially for a brand like yourselves at the luxury end or in a specific niche, where you need to watch the marketplaces you're selling on to make sure they don't become, you know, they don't take the Amazon route of we'll take everybody.
And, yeah, definitely.
And it becomes a mess and no longer a good fit for the brand. Therefore, that benefit is eroded.
Yeah, and there's a lot of mechanics behind it. I mean, you want to almost vet these marketplaces, because even though they may be really popular and successful, if it turns out that their customer service is really poor, or their returns management or something like that, or post-purchase, any element of it is poor, that reflects on us. I mean, we do have it now from time to time. Our customer services teams get, oh, I bought this from X, Y, Z. I'm not really happy with what they've told me, so I'm coming to you. And you think, well, your contract of sale's not with us, so we can help you. But yeah, it's just awkward, and you just don't really want to create more of that, really. You want to know that the people you're dealing with have got the integrity to fulfill as you would to your customers directly, because it's an extension of your brand, really, isn't it?
It is. And it again, I come back to the, you know, the point you made about we're a fashion brand, therefore we don't want to be dealing with hosting and we don't want to be dealing with this. It's also, if you've gone to all that effort, as you went to great effort to make all the integrations work, to avoid the anomaly things that have to be manually dealt with, you don't want the anomaly customer calling up because the people you're partnering with
have let you down,
because it creates the same problem just in an audio world rather than an API world. But there's one thing which I do want us to highlight before we move into the top tips, which is we are now on E-commerce Master Plan taking our kind of growth for good e-commerce sustainability angle. And there's something you guys do, which is really cool, which is around helping people keep their Grenson shoes working for ever longer, which is obviously one of the key things we all need to do, is use our products for longer and throw them out less often. So tell us a little bit about how core that is to the brand.
I think it's going to become more, it's actually a service we've offered for a long time. But I think, as you say, it's becoming more and more prevalent in people's minds now about we're almost heading back into that mend and repair rather than replace mindset, which is fantastic. And yeah, because of the way our shoes are constructed, they can be sent back to the factory here and resold probably around 3 or 4 times before you get to the point where there's pretty much not enough material left to stitch another sole onto, if you like.
Because we're not talking about, you know, if you go down the high street or the mall and you go to the stall and they slap another sole on the bottom. We're talking about literally re-sewing,
yeah,
isn't it?
So basically your shoes will come back. They'll go, there's a thing called a last, which is basically the shape of a foot. It's the inside of the shoe, and it determines the sort of width, fit and toe shape, instep and all that sort of stuff. And each shoe is made on its own last. So we'll put your shoes on the last pattern that they were actually made on, remove the sole completely, but we actually keep your insoles. So even though you'll get a brand new outer sole on your shoes, they still will fit like your old shoes did, because they're molded to your feet where you might have worn them for a number of years, etc. So yeah, it's a fantastic service, really, and it applies across the range. So we can do it with the sneakers, the more formal shoes, obviously boots as well, and I believe we can do it even with some of the vegan products too. So we have vegan products in the range that are made from non-animal product. They're vegan society certified. So yeah, even as they start to wear down, it's not a case of replacing them. They can be sent back and looked at too. So it's a fantastic service, and one that we're actually trying to look to build on online and digitally. And how can we make it easier for the customer to get shoes back to us securely without them being damaged or lost in transit, etc., and our factory to turn them around? I mean, I guess that's the beauty of having your own manufacturing, really, is that that you can leverage things like that. We're not reliant on any sort of third parties.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are.
To sell successfully on Amazon and or Walmart, you need to be optimizing everything. Your ads, your products, including the ones you're planning on launching, your SEO, product availability, and your product pages. At the heart of all successful optimization is the right data. You need the numbers on what your products are doing, what's happening in your product categories, and what your competitors are up to across PPC, SEO, and sales. Without all of that, you are flying blind and missing opportunities. Oh, and don't forget, you need it for all the Amazon regions you're selling in. Basically, your marketplace success is all about the data you have and how well you use it. That's why you need to try out Datahawk. They'll provide you with all the data you need and help you analyze it to make the right decisions about how to grow your sales. Try Datahawk today, the number one FBA seller software and e-commerce analytics platform for sellers, vendors, and agencies. You'll get it for 14 days free and unlimited trial. Go to datahawk.co/masterplan. That's datahawk.co/masterplan to start your free account.
It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. So, Ash, are you ready for the top tips?
Well, I don't know how top my tips would be, but yeah, let's go for it.
Well, they've been pretty top so far, trust me. Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
It's a slightly older book, but I found it amazing to read. It's called Webs of Influence by Natalie Nahai, I think is how you pronounce her name. And it's all around the psychology of online persuasion. So it's a real nice read into why we decide to do what we do when we're looking at content and interacting with a website online. And obviously, you know, it's not all about the conversion of a sale. Sometimes it's a micro or macro conversion of a mailing list sign up or using a category filter or something else. So it's I found it took some of what I knew and assumed and either set it straight or blew me totally out of the water and just made me think about things in a slightly different light for when you're building pages and looking at things. And yeah, I think it's just an interesting one to have in your back pocket, if you like, once you've read it, because it's the biggest challenge to all of us, isn't it? Making someone buy at the end of the day. It's e-commerce's biggest problem. How do you get someone to press add to cart and, more importantly, hand over their hard-earned money to you?
Anything which helps with that in the right way, we are more than up for. Okay, the traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
For me personally, it's probably a bit of a guilty pleasure and indulging myself, but I still am a massive fan of on-page SEO and organic channels, really. I think it's just such a broad, well, I guess it's such a leveler in a way, because if you get it right and relevant to you, to what you're doing, you can rank against Amazon and eBay. If you do it right, we do, you know. There's little old Grenson above high street majors. And I just find that amazing that, you know, we do that all in-house. We don't use agencies for it. And it's just fantastic. I think I've learned that over years through experience and learning from good people that do it. And to be fair, and using external agencies in the past and picking up tips and stuff. And I get the idea of going straight for paid for you know, super funded businesses that have got investor funding and they need business now, so they go straight for that paid model and drive volume. But I definitely think it's a tactic that's underplayed, really, because people just think straight to that paid option. It's neglected, I guess, is the right word.
Nice, I like it. The tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
I guess the main one that we use for a lot of our research is SEMrush. It's I guess some people would market it as an SEO marketing research platform, but actually it covers so much more because it's great for competitor analysis. It's great for technical audits and crawls of the site. It's not massively expensive when you look at the annual price compared to some of its competitors. And it takes data from so many sources for when you're looking at keyword research. And, you know, especially in fashion, we've got two seasons a year. So we're in essence almost having a new catalog twice a year. So when we're looking to put those title tags together on categories and product pages, et cetera, it's invaluable, really.
Excellent tip. Okay, the growth top tip. If you met someone today who's focused on growing their e-commerce business from 100 orders per month to 1,000, what would be your number one tip for them?
I guess it probably reiterates something we've already said, but I would say take a step back and actually look at where your customers are and what's the most cost-effective way of getting to them. So if they turn around and say, we're getting 100 orders a month, but we're spending X, Y, Z on advertising, My first thing would be straight away is there a channel or marketplace that would cost you less than that and probably grow your reach massively? And could you afford to do that and your paid efforts at the same time to see what you can do? Because I still think people maybe don't always think about where people spend a lot of their time. And people go, oh, social media, we'll advertise on social media. And you think, yeah, but as time's going on, more and more people aren't in a purchasing frame of mind when they're using social media. So it might not always be the silver bullet that people think it is. Whereas some of these sort of price comparison sites or marketplaces in their traditional format, I mean, you can't get anything purer than price comparison, really, because people are there to buy. That's all they're there to do.
Yeah.
There's very little content apart from the odd blog article. They're there to find the product. So that would be my tip. Get in front of people's eyes as easily as you can and be prepared to think outside the box on it rather than the standard models or just accepting the standard sort of spiel you get from some agencies that will just try and hard sell you on their paid SEO or their paid search tactics and how they can make you the most popular business in the world. Just do a little bit of your own homework on it. And I think you'll stand strong. And then if you manage to get to 100 orders a month, you're obviously doing something right.
I love that. Ash, thank you so much. Before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media, please?
Yeah, it's very simple. Grenson.com is our global domain. And then, yeah, it's Grenson Shoes on Facebook and Instagram. So we're there. Come and find us.
Excellent. Thanks, Ash. And thank you so much for being on the podcast and for being so open, talking through those tough decisions that I know a lot of businesses are dealing with around updating their tech stack and making decisions around headless and dealing with all the APIs and the integrations. I'm sure we've helped a lot of people. So thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
So there you have it. Some of the ins and outs and things to consider if you're going through that replatforming, re-updating your tech stack to get it fit for whatever is coming in 2022 and beyond. And I think that marketplaces trend is one I think we'll be exploring. We've already been exploring, but we're exploring here on the podcast to see just what format those are taking and some of the opportunities that are out there for you. But the key thing is to make sure you're on the right ones, of course, and that it all works nice and seamlessly for you. And I love the way in which, with an expensive shoe product, they are enabling their customers to have that product fully repaired or rebuilt, as they frame it up on the website, to extend the life of that product. So as it's therefore creating less or making better use, I suppose, of the Earth's resources. So even the businesses you wouldn't expect have that sustainability element in them. Now, when we finished recording, Ash offered to, if anyone wants to have a chat with him about their replatforming processes or anything else we discussed about, you can get hold of him via his LinkedIn profile. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes on the website. Talking of the show notes on the website, you can get your hands on those, which have the notes from today's show, including our top tips, links to what we've mentioned, and Ash's LinkedIn profile. Go to ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast. There you can also add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on many of the other things I share to help you improve your business. Now, amongst the things that those on our email list get are notifications as episodes go live and details of the webinar I'm going to be hosting to round off our January growth series, where I'll be sharing my take on where you should focus for maximum impact in 2022. The January growth series continues on Thursday with our second experts mashup episode. Our experts will be sharing their top tip for e-commerce success in 2022. And if you don't want to miss it, make sure you followed and subscribe to us wherever you are listening. Thank you for tuning in to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I bring you a new interview every single episode because I'm trying to inspire and help e-commerce business owners like you to succeed and thrive with their business, despite all the challenges you're currently dealing with, both to make your business more successful and to turn it into a force for good for our planet. If you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I hope you have a brilliant week, and never, 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 never forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.
Recharge is the leading subscription management solution helping e-commerce merchants of all sizes launch and scale subscription offerings. Over 15,000 merchants use subscriptions powered by Recharge to grow their business and their communities by increasing average order value, reducing churn, and providing predictable recurring revenue. Turn transactions into relationships and experience seamless subscription commerce with Recharge. Check them out at rechargepayments.com/masterplan.